parent, but with you colleagues, I know in you I have a family that will be there for me. Your messages meant so much for me. And a very good morning to the chairperson of the FFC, Mr. Sash, and the FFC team, director of the PBO, Dr. Janji, and team PBO, the National Treasury and FALGA, you honorable members of the committee, and all officials and guests present in the virtual meeting. And my special guests, honorable chairperson, and members of the provincial portfolio committees on finance.
It's 9 hours.
I would like to take this opportunity to welcome you all and thank you in advance for fully participating in this meeting. I know that you're going to participate, and I have to acknowledge that the honorable members, there are changes that have happened in other provinces in terms of the chairpersons of the portfolio committees on finance, and I will request that the members from the provinces, as and when they speak, they should introduce themselves so that we can have an understanding and know each other. Welcome to this team of appropriations. Today, honorable members, we are going to be briefed by the FSC, a PBO, on the Division of Revenue Bill B3 2021, a section from 76 Bill. As you are aware, when we process this bill, we must do so in compliance with the MCOP Rule 204. The Section 36 bills should be dealt with in a manner that will ensure that provinces have sufficient time to consider the bill and confirm negotiating and final mandate. I know this has been a problem, a complaint from ourselves and the provinces. Hopefully this time around, as we have started now, I'm going to outline the process, we will have enough opportunity to, as provinces, to deal to process the mandate. Most importantly, honorable members, NCOP Rule 240, Sub Rule 2, highlights that a six-week period must be observed when processing such bills, to such an extent that the 6 weeks period may be extended with the approval of the chairperson on the NCOP, the chairperson of this NCOP. In terms of the above narrated approach, this week is the second week of the 6 week cycle. We started the process last week on the 10th of March 2021 by receiving a briefing from National Treasury on this bill that we're dealing with, the DORA. The third week of this process will be when we brief provinces on the week of the 4th to the 7th of March 2021, followed by fourth week, where we'll be receiving the briefing by SALGA, and we'll also be having public hearings. The fifth week period will be when we consider negotiating mandates, and the final week will be when we process final mandates and adopt our report and table it in the NCOP for decision by the House. These two to brief us today are here to capacitate us, I'm referring to the FMC and the PBO, to make us understand what may have been considered by the executive when putting together this bill. We will declarations, and I'm impressed with the way you tackled the previous meeting. Thank you very much. Let me now request the Secretariat to deal with the second item of the agenda. And I have taken it for granted, members, that you have the agenda. If not, can I get an indication while Lubabalo, can you attend to apologies?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, apology from Mr. Oka. Apology.
Thank you very much, Lubabalo. We will shoot straight to the third item. And honorable members, I'm doing this because we are operating under unpredictable circumstances and uncomfortable circumstances because of the load shedding that we are experiencing. So we are just hoping that we will all be in this meeting.
especially the point we highlighted here is that if you look at the interventions that were implemented for COVID-19, they were disproportionately implemented by national government, which is not absolutely nothing wrong. But I think the point we really try to highlight here is that even going forward, when some of these disaster interventions, we need to the allocations thereof that comes with the intervention must also comply with that greater provision of relevance. Especially if you look at some of the elements of the COVID-19 relief package, for instance, the business loan guarantee. We also need to see provinces having businesses which are maybe located in other provinces benefiting from the relief, so that it's not just concentrated in businesses that may be in housing or Western Cape. So therefore, that is really quite important. The other point is the allocation which has been made for vaccination. The Commission really has wanted to know that the allocation may really be incompatible with the government's goal of achieving the health condition for 12 months period. Of course, we know the fact that the minister also mentioned that there might be they will have to get into the contagion group that should there be. But given the current pressure that we see in higher education, there may be some issues that they may be functional also. Again, the point is just to say that if the pronouncement or policy pronouncement are made, the budget must always fall in meeting those policy pronouncements. Next slide, please. The next slide speaks to the provincial executive chain. Here, Chairperson, the point we want to highlight here is really about the fluctuation of the forward estimate with respect to the provincial executive chain for provincial executive chain provinces. And we acknowledge the fact that, of course, there was a lot of uncertainty, so we could not have had stable effective allocation. But I think, going forward, the point we want to highlight here is that we need to minimize this fluctuation so that they do not affect wrong spending signals, but also the fact that they also tend to affect the projects which are implemented at the provincial level. So because of this fluctuation, projects tend to take time to be completed. So there's a need to minimize those fluctuations. The next slide, this slide really just to remind the members about the concerns that are always raised regarding the provincial equitable share formula in relation to whether it's equitable across all the provinces. Those prioritized funds, especially in the impact that is going to have on on completion of the project for which I already started. Next slide. The last slide, the next slide, speak here again about the changes made to the conditional grant. Briefly here, the point I want to make is that we continue to see constant changes made to a number of conditional grants.
direct conditional grants and 24 million as indirect conditional grants. With all the changes in this, they are set to increase by 3% in futures as well as in the previous slide. But if we focus on the diagram below, we try to separate our conditional grants into capacity building grants and total infrastructure grants to see what is happening to infrastructure grants, because government has made some pronouncements about infrastructure leading the growth process. What we see there is that over time, over the MTM, there will be even a gradual decline in total infrastructure grants, which may not really support this infrastructure-led growth. But we see last year there was a rapid increase, but this particular increase led to temper as we move forward. Next slide. The next slide looks at the baseline cut of baseline of conditional grants where I just said over the MTM. The baseline of these conditional grants will be cut by 2 billion, and this is due to underspending in a number of grants, and they fall disproportionately high on the
redouble our efforts to cut waste and inefficiency rather than cut core social services. Ultimately, that will require consequence management and accountability right from the top. And when we see it starting right from the top, we must filter it down right to the bottom. I think we can go to the next slide. Thank you. We note the tax proposals in the budget, and putting money back into the pockets of individuals, in particular through above inflation adjustments to the personal income tax brackets. That is going to increase disposable income of middle-income and low-income employees, families that are having an employed member who are in the middle or lower income, middle class, I would say, and that's a good thing. But of course, it does create a worry about whether we are raising the resources we require, and added to that, Treasury has taken off, or government has taken off, proposed tax increases and has also proposed to reduce corporate income tax. So again, we need to balance these tax cuts against cuts to core expenditure requirements such as social grants. Chair, I see you and I'll rush to the end. We must assess the division of revenue in terms of its final outcomes. There is heightened uncertainty, and I think the comments that our researcher Eddie was making about the volatility in allocations are very important. There is greater uncertainty, and it's a very difficult environment to plan for everybody. And lastly, again, we should avoid retrogression. We should stimulate growth. And this requires us to look to the promotion of local business. I will ask some of my other commissioners, chairing, with your permission, I would ask that we take questions and comments from honourable members, and then perhaps ask some of our commissioners to also reply to them. Thank you very much.
I'm not sure if Chairperson said I could continue.
opportunity, Jefferson and honorable members of TBO, to blame the committee in this regard. I'm with my colleagues at Dr. Aland, Dr. Mohammed. I saw Dr. Sikatan as well at the platform, but I think other team members will join in during the discussion. I will take you through the presentation between myself and Dr. Aland and the other colleagues who come into the presentation. I'll do that. This is a presentation outline. I'll do the introduction, and Dr. Aland will take us through, and then I'll just come in at the end of the presentation. I think just to emphasize that the presentation looks at both the trends within the division of revenue, and look at some of the changes that was done compared to the FGPS in terms of the proposed adjustments and prioritizations, and look at some of the amounts that have been reversed and the likely impact on the spheres, various spheres, public finances, and also look at the outline for the MTF and raise some of the concerns as our colleagues from the SFC have raised. So we have similar concerns which we'll highlight later in the presentation. I think what we're also trying to do, Chairperson and other members, is try to highlight some of the developmental indicators, like I said, the indicators before the start of the pandemic, but also try to plot in what are some of the impacts of the COVID-19 we have in these development indicators, but also trying to show how likely the current location likes to impact the system, particularly at the local and provincial level, CS level, but also take into account the effect that there has been some regress of the developmental indicators. I'll give Dr. Aland to take us through detail and I'll come in. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Member. Dr. Aland, I'll move the slides for you. Thanks.
Thank you, Director, and good morning, Honorable Members. So the analysis of the 2021 medium-term expenditure framework shows that it reimburses departments, provinces and local government in 2021-22 for the adjustments made towards the COVID-19 pandemic and pressures from SOCs in the 2020 adjusted budget. Reprioritization of the 2021 baselines were then introduced to provide for remaining pressures from the COVID-19 pandemic. Once-off priorities such as the local government elections and Census 21 and making trade-offs between the realization of constitutionally protected socioeconomic rights and others such as pressures from SOCs. The reprioritization was mainly based on expenditure performance in the 2021 financial year and the adjustment to baselines according to the demand for services based on data updates informing the equitable share on a provincial and local government sphere. The outer years of the 2021 NDIS were adjusted to achieve fiscal consolidation and reduce the deficit. And concern about economic fiscal pressures expected in the 2021 and 21-22 financial years led to lower than previously estimated distributions to provincial and local governments in the Division of Revenue Board. These pressures mainly relate to allocations on a national level. Members, on the provincial level, the equitable share is the main source of revenue through which provinces are able to meet their expenditure responsibilities. The current equitable share consists of six components that account for the relative demand for services and annually take into consideration the change of demographics in each of the provinces. The first component, education, accounts for 48%. Health accounts for 27%, and a basic component accounts for 16% of the share and is derived from each province's share of the national population. An institutional component divides 5% of the share equally between provinces, and the last two components are distributed according to income and economic activity in the province. Then, members, the local government fiscal framework responds to the constitutional assignment of powers and functions to the local government sphere, and the framework refers to all resources available to municipalities to meet their expenditure responsibilities. National transfers account for a relatively small proportion of the local government fiscal framework, with the majority of local government revenues being raised by municipalities themselves through their revenue-raising powers. poor rural municipalities, however, receive most of the revenue from transfers, while urban municipalities, although not always effective, raise the majority of their own revenues. Such as the case with the provincial equitable share, funds raised by national government are transferred to municipalities through a local government equitable share or an unconditional grant and conditional grants. Local government's equitable share is divided among the country's 257 municipalities using a formula to ensure objectivity. It also uses demographic and other data to determine each municipality's portion of the local government equitable share. Next slide. So, maybe before we look at the allocations, next slide. Before we look at the allocations, this slide will give you an idea of the poverty and inequality situation in the country. So in terms of the human development category, South Africa ranked 114th out of 189 countries. But in terms of the inequality causes, it causes a staggering 34% decline from the Human Development Index to the Inequality Human Development Index in 2019. In terms of the gender inequality index, South Africa was ranked 93rd out of 162 countries in 2019. And in 2016, 3.6 million people were multidimensionally poor, and an additional 7 million people were vulnerable to poverty. Then in 2021, the COVID-19 pandemic even worsened the already high levels of poverty in South Africa, and there was slow progress in dealing with the service delivery backlogs. Next slide. So members, the percentage of households that depended on grant income already increased in the years before COVID-19, and must have worsened during 2020. But expenditure on grants for 2021-22 is lower in real terms than it was in 2019. About 18% of households reported that they had inadequate and severely inadequate access to food in 2019. The graph on the bottom right shows that in 2019, 10.4 million people did not have adequate access to food. And this situation may also still worsen if you take into consideration the higher than general CPI in terms of food. Next slide. In terms of changes to the 2020 medium-term expenditure framework, it shows that non-interest allocations were increased in 2021 during the adjustments budget by 2.6%, and it has decreased in 2021 by 1.2%, and it's also decreasing over the medium term by 0.1%. If you just look at the national department, during the adjusted budget in 2021, there was an increase of 6.2% towards national departments, and that has now been decreased in the 21-22% by 5.1%, and it's also slowly decreasing by 2.8% over the medium term. On a provincial level, we experienced a 3.2% decrease during the adjusted budget, and in the current or the new financial year, it would increase by 1.8%, and there's a slow increase over the medium term by 1% on a provincial level. On a local government level, there was an increase of 4.5% during the adjusted budget, and it decreases by 0.3% in 2021-22 from the adjusted budget, and it's slowly decreasing by 0.4% over the medium term. Next slide. When we translate the nominal values into proportions, national departments receive 49.5% of national revenue. Local government received 9% in 2021-22, and provinces received 41.5%. When breaking it down further, provinces received 81.9% in equitable shares and 22.9% in conditional grants. And local government received 56.5% in equitable share, 38% in conditional grants, and then they also get a proportion of the general fuel levy of 10.6%. Next slide. Members, this diagram shows the change in divisional revenue from 2016-17 medium term. On a national level, the actual share spent in 2016-17 was 47.9%, and it increased to 50.4% in 2021, and is estimated at 51.2% in 2021-22. So these high proportions estimated on a national level is actually to the disadvantage of the other two spheres of government. But in 2021, over the medium term, you can see a slight reprioritization of expenditure from the national sphere towards the provincial and local government spheres of government. Next slide. But members, as the FFC also indicated, the pie is actually getting smaller. When you just focus on 2015-16, on a national level, the green proportion of the bar shows that national government has spent 7,324 rand per capita, and that is basically decreasing over the medium term to 6,517 per capita. If you look at the provincial expenditure in 2015-16, 6,323 was spent per capita, and that decreases to 5,704 per capita in 2023-24. Next slide. So, members, when we look at changes within a selection of national votes from 2020 to 2021, if we just focus on basic education, you will see that in the adjusted budget, basic education's budget were reduced by 7.6%, but then it increases again in 21-22 by 15.5%. When we look at health, there was an increase during the adjusted budget of 4.6%, and it even increases further by 7.7%. That also basically shows the priority that has been allocated towards the health sector. The social development department has increased by 16.7% in 2021 during the adjusted period, and it decreases by 11.1% in 2021-22. The police decreased by 2.1%, and it even further decreases by 3.2% in 2021-22. And when we just look at transport, more to the bottom of the table, transport decreased by 7.5% during the adjusted period, but it's been increased by 16.3% in the 2021-22 year. So what this also illustrates is that the 2021 estimates mainly reversed some of the reprioritization of allocations during the supplementary and adjustments budgets in 2020-21. Next slide. So, members, before we discuss the nominal value of provincial shares that mainly provide for expenditure on education, health services and social development, we need to get an understanding of the development trends within some of these sectors. The first graph shows that 21.6% of learners cited a lack of money as the main reason for not attending an educational institution, while 8.6% of individuals left their studies as a result of family commitments, and approximately 8% of individuals felt that education was useless. This was in terms of the survey 2019. The top right figure shows that 75.2% of learners who attended public schools benefited from school feeding schemes in 2019, compared to 63.1% 10 years earlier. So although inadequate access to money to pay for fees remains the major hurdle for learners, the attendance of non-fee schools has increased over the past 10 years. The percentage of learners aged 5 years and older who attended schools where there was no payment of school fees shows that after a real increase in basic education expenditure from 2020 to 2021, the real expenditure on basic education is relatively unchanged over the 8 years. Next slide. Members, when we look at the provincial equitable share allocation per province, it shows that total adjustments were reduced by 3.3% in 2020-21, and the adjustments were made between provinces were between minus 2.8% and minus 3.8%. When you look at the total estimates in 2021-22, it increased by 0.6%, and when you look at the changes between the different provinces, it ranged between minus 1.6% and 2.9% in 2021-22. Over the 2021 medium term, total annual average growth amounts to only 0.3%, and an annual average growth of between minus 1.1% and 1.7% between the different provinces. Next slide. Members, when we started the presentation, we also indicated that actual expenditure plays a role when budget allocations are considered. So provincial in-year information from the first quarter result shows that total payments amounted to 21.2% in the first quarter. In terms of breakdown, education, the education sector has been 22.3% in the first quarter, health 23.9%, and social development has been 19.4%. In terms of the economic classification, you will see on a provincial level they've spent 22.9% on compensation of employees in the first quarter. Next slide. Provincial in the information on conditional grants shows slow spending of 40.1% in the first quarter of 2020-21. And just if we look at individual conditional grants, the IDEMA grant has only spent 2.4%. In terms of basic education, the total spending was 9.1%. The health facilities only spent 17.9%. In terms of social development, they've spent 10.3% on early childhood development. And the reason for showing actual spending is also to show that it might result in underspending at the end of the financial year, and departments might ask for rollovers to the 2021-22 financial year during the adjusted budget period. Next slide. The members, despite slow spending in the first quarter, provincial conditional grants increased by 7.6% in 2021 from the revised estimates for 2020. And members, we also indicated at the beginning of the presentation beginning that 2021 allocations compensated provinces for the reprioritization during the adjusted budget in 2020. So when we use the first grant, Comprehensive Agricultural Support, as an example, you will see that that grant was adjusted downwards by 21.8%, but that grant increases by 30.8% in 2021-22. Also, if we just use HIV-TB as an example, that grant increased by 11.6%, but also just to note that the COVID-19 component is now added to that specific grant. So in the adjusted budget, it increased by 11.6%, and it increases further by 1.3% in 2021-22. So just in terms of the local government members, we've illustrated the importance of national and provincial government allocations towards the socioeconomic situation in the country. Next slide. Now we move to the local government sphere, which has a role to play not only in the socioeconomy, but also in regional economic growth. So the basic services component of the local government equitable share critically provides for free basic water, sanitation and electricity, and refuse removal services to all or 100% of indigent households. Government intends to consistently, however, decrease coverage over the medium term. So in 2021-22, that coverage decreases by 96% in 2022-23 by 94%. should be minimal because municipalities have not rolled out free basic services to all indigent households. Next slide. This slide just shows a slow increase in expenditure on water services over the 2021 medium term, despite the fact that 2.1 million households did not have access to pumped water in 2015, and by 2019, 3.2 million households did not have access to pumped water, and more than 1.5 million households reported poor water services in 2019. Next slide. With this slide, members, we want to illustrate the importance of the implementation of public transport network at local government level. So the cost and quality of public transport influences levels of labour force discouragement. The number of passenger journeys declined from 62.6 million in March 2017 to 42.5 million in 2019. Which could be attributed to the collapse and problems of the passenger rail system or the non-availability of a bus network. And not all recipient cities of the public transport network grant have successfully established public transport systems. And we've also seen that that was also the reason for the reduction of this grant during the 2020-21 adjusted period. The next slide shows the detail of the grant allocations of the 21 medium-term expenditure framework. So in terms of the direct conditional grants, they were reduced by 8.7% in 2020-21 and is estimated to increase by 13.6% in 2021-22. Although the public transport network grant was reduced by 31.9% in 2020, it is estimated to grow by 48.4% in 2021-22. We must just make sure that the allocation is spent and that we basically implement the policy in terms of the transport network. Also to note that local government has only managed to spend 28.6% of the grant in the first 6 months of the 2020-21 financial year, and it is expected that the slow spending could result again in a rollover to 21-22 during the adjustment period. Next slide. So members, I'm ending off the presentation. So the next two slides provide information on the revenue and expenditure trends per province for the first 6 months of the local government financial year, as well as the expenditure on local government conditional grants. But you can go through the numbers at your own time. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Landi. Chairperson, the honourable members, what we're trying to emphasize here is that the COVID-19 and related economic shutdowns, lockdowns, has worsened already high levels of poverty and inequality in South Africa. Seeing a number of layoffs, some of the sectors are worse affected by others. But also, you look at the informal economy as well, has hardly hit by economic shutdowns related to COVID-19, which then requires a lot of expectations that government will chip in to try to provide households in this regard. Even before the pandemic, there was a slow progress in dealing with the delivery backlogs from different spheres of government. Although before, as I said at the beginning of the presentation, we tried to provide status of development indicators before the pandemic, we had seen the signs of improvement in development indicators, but again, it was that time we've seen there were already signs of regress on some of these indicators. Dr. Rand mentioned the issue around water and the local government and other sectors of the economy. So as a result, the pandemic and related economic shutdown has raised some of the service delivery gains achieved over the decade and continue to put more pressure on government to deliver mostly the spheres of government. Government intends to consistently decrease coverage of basic service components of local government sphere that critically provides for free basic service to the indigent household over the medium term, which is a bit of a concern. It's clear that the division of revenue, chairperson and honourable members, did not turn out as might have been envisaged in the years before the pandemic. And the effect of the others' lives just further, leading that place to developmental indicators in Angola. Thank you so much for the opportunity. We'll be available for comment. Thank you so much. Thanks.
Of the pandemic. What is it that makes this budget different and ensuring that we reach higher levels of efficiency and effectiveness as we move ahead. Because I would be worried if we are just maintaining and managing the status quo. So I would like them to highlight areas of improvement from the previous financial year into this financial year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mkiva. Any further hands?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm really struggling with connectivity. May I ask a question?
Yes, Honorable Ryder, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for accommodating me. Sorry, I've been disconnected for a good part of the PBO's presentation. So I'm going to keep it quite short, and I think that the point I'm going to ask about is around the local government division of revenue. Specifically, you know, we've seen the 9%, we've been moaning about the 9% allocation for a couple of years, and we're not seeing much movement away from that. With the allocation staying pretty much where it is, and although the percentage may have gone up, as was pointed out, this is because the pie is shrinking. I must say, I do appreciate the fact that the equitable share is increasing, and I know that conditional grants is decreasing, and I think some of that has got to do with the way that some of that money has been spent in the past. But we continue to see Eskom debt and debt to Randwater and other water authorities increasing and not being managed correctly, and as a result we see massive problems in terms of fulfilling constitutional obligations by municipalities. And you know, let's talk about Mpuleni, my favorite example, where people have had their water cut. So we've got rainwater that has cut down the water pressure by almost 30% to Mpuleni, which has meant that people in high-lying areas are not getting water. And there doesn't seem to be any kind of support or guidance or inputs from Treasury directly in terms of getting to beat this animal into submission. And it's not an animal, it's become a beast, because really the legacy debt that some of the municipalities are dealing with is massive. So just perhaps a comment both from FFC and PBO in terms of dealing with that legacy debt, because often, and certainly we've got a local government election now, there'll be a couple of new mayors moving in, and they're going to inherit a problem or new administrator, new executives moving in, etc. They're going to inherit this massive problem that is not necessarily of their own making, and they, you know, they're having to deal with it. So, just some information. Is there any discussion, or have you seen any hints of a discussion from Treasury in terms of dealing with helping municipalities deal with this legacy debt? The second question I have really relates to grants, and it's the move from direct to indirect grants, where Treasury and National Departments seem to be taking a bigger role in terms of handling the spending and the procurement side of things, and delivering an end product to provinces specifically, rather than actually giving provinces the money and allowing them to go through their own procurement processes. Now, there's pros and cons for these things, and obviously it gives you more control, but it also doesn't allow you to get a lot of local content. I'd just like to hear inputs from FFC and PBO to perhaps help our thinking on these issues.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ryder. I noticed that the chairperson is back. Just for the benefit of the chairperson, is three questions from three members. I mean, questions from three members. Honorable Molusane and Honorable Mkiva and Honorable Ryder. In terms of Honorable Molusane, just overview question around corruption and officials in prison. One from Kiva, it's around the 2021 different budget from the last year budget. What is the difference in the high level of improvement? Honorable Ryder is on the local government division of revenue allocations to and the debt legacy. Just in terms of summary, so then I give over to the chairperson to go forward in terms of FFC and BBO for response. Thank you, chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Jato, and thanks so much for coming in. I've been kicked out several times. The network is dealing with me. And thanks, honorable members, for the questions. I think I don't want to go to town on these issues. I've gone through the documents, and members, please, if you still want to come in, you will indicate. But then there's another one item that is left out. What I have realized, which is a big concern for me, on the presentation by FFC, I think the issue of the public wage that is not resolved. That, of course, is if it's not resolved, it's going to affect the provinces. And to what extent is it going to affect the provinces? And I expected the provinces, the chairpersons of the provinces who are in the platform, to talk to the issue so that the Treasury being here can hear what you're saying, but also to seek more clarity and information from the two organs, the PBO and FFC. And when PBO, is it PBO? That, no, it's FFC. You spoke about the rollovers that we must expect, the rollovers request. And one understands we have once had an engagement or a session as this committee whereby we were talking about or deliberating on the non-expenditure or the slow expenditure on grants. So I think that might be the cause. If not, let us be advised on why non-expenditure. Because it's unacceptable if service delivery is so needed at the ground level and resources are availed, but still there's slowness in terms of the expenditure. On the PBO, public transport reduced by 1.3 billion. I remember in 2019, as a committee, we have complained and raised concerns. Even in our report, we have resolved. We have made recommendations to public transport department in as far as this reduction and shifting of funds on public transport. I just wonder, in terms of your analysis, who is going to be more affected on this reduction of the public transport grant, the 1.3 billion? Who is going to be more affected? Because we know that the poor and the working class are the ones who rely more on public transport. Now that we are on level one, the economy is expected to also respond to the level. But if there's no mode of issues that they have raised. FSC, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I want to invite Commissioner Mukadi and Commissioner Rockman and Commissioner Fowler, who are present here, to give some responses to the questions in that order. Commissioner Mukadi.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, thank you, Chair. Yes, through the...
Just a minute. Your camera, I think the first thing on your camera, we can see your... The picture. We can't see your head, but we can see what is above your head.
Yes.
We can't see...
Chair. Yes, through your chair, could I then bring down the camera so that I can then just respond to the question that I would like to take?
That would be better, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to respond to the question raised by Honorable Moletsane, that of corruption. Our chairperson, in his concluding remarks, made mention of our recommendation that national government needs to be decisive and have a coherent strategy as well as political will. That may be just a one-liner, but that one-liner was informed by a deeper discussion on the recognition of the state of affairs through the three tiers of government with regard to corruption and the lack of political will and decisiveness to deal with that. We know that there are general processes that are in place with regard to dealing with that, but the overall impression on the citizenry is that not much is being done, and this leads to a lot of lawlessness and a deficit in trust. With regard to adopting fiscal policy to respond to this, a reversal of public entities and local government financial and operational positions which are caused by maladministration and governance failures through financial mismanagement and corruption. We have also realize that it is necessary to develop yet another front of dealing with corruption, just rather than jailing people, to provide additional capacity in terms of leadership through the three tiers of government. And for this reason, FFC has embarked on a research to adapt and suggest those adaptations of leadership that could have a bearing in terms of proper governance, management and efficiency through the three tiers of government. Very shortly, as soon as the research is finalized, we hope that that could just also be an addition to helping solve this scourge that is happening. And with regard to a broader coherent strategy, the FFC also recognized that the shortcomings right from reductions in ECD up to reductions in NASFAS eventually have a cumulative effect of marginalizing a lot of other people who may not actually finalize and reach successful education. And as a result, then they get kicked out of the system and are susceptible to criminality, which eventually finds its way into the system and also puts a strain with regard to social funding and so forth. So the coherent strategy in the line that that the chairperson has concluded is actually referring to those kind of issues, that there's a need to have a proper coherent strategy in terms of dealing with this, rather than just on a one individual issue where somebody has committed crime and then goes to jail. That's not incorrect. That's got to be done. But over and above that, there's got to be a kind of shifting in terms of a social conscience of people and how citizenry responds or takes responsibility for the civic issues. Thanks, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm done.
Money goes to where it is intended to go. The other issue
issue that we have picked up a lot in the past is that the tariff setting of municipalities are not entirely realistic when it comes to water and electricity specifically. And I think that there is a lot of capacity building that probably has to take place. And a bit more urgency needs to be put into the efforts of municipalities to meet their commitments to ESCOM and the water board. In instances where payment plans have been drawn up, you often find that municipalities do not comply with their own payment plans that they agreed to in council for a variety of reasons. But usually it's just that they were under so much pressure to get a payment plan approved and signed that it's not necessarily realistically reflective of the revenue they are able to generate. And then also a major problem in these with regard to ESCOM debt is the areas where ESCOM supplies directly and the municipality has no control to be able to cut off electricity or to look at metering and so forth. So the direct supply areas of ESCOM also contributes to this problem. So I think there needs to be an update on where we are with respect to both the ESCOM debt as well as the water board debt, to get a more realistic plan in place to enable municipalities to catch up with their debt, but to also enable ESCOM and the water boards to approve their financial position. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you, Commissioner Rockman. Anything further from FFC?
Commissioner Fowler is coming in now, thank you, Honorable Chair. There are two issues that I wanted to touch on. The first, I just wanted to expand a bit on the Mfuleni case. The question of debt in Mfuleni is not the only issue which needs to be addressed. The key issue there is that in the last 20 years, the economy has declined massively because of the privatization of the ESCOM plant, which once employed 14,000 people, now employs 2,300. And it is important that there's also an economic intervention, economic support. There are a number of initiatives that are there, but there are funds required for that. So I think that's the key issue, that one of the key issues. Second area is around the public transport grant. That issue, clearly it shows, statistics show in most parts of our country that the poor who are captured in the townships spend most of their income on transport and food. And so a cut in the transport grant to change the way transport works is in fact will impact the poor and the working class most significantly. The key, the alternative approach to the cut is to change the way the transport grant is now being spent. Currently it's being spent on in many of the large cities, the bus, the rapid transit system, which unfortunately has very, very expensive infrastructure, and cheaper infrastructure could be used which would serve the same purpose, not having expensive stations and having much more effective stations that could serve the same purpose but not be as expensive. So that would be one of the key recommendations I would make. And I would also support Commissioner Mokati, that the key issue around corruption is a national campaign. International experience has shown that the only way to address corruption is a national campaign. Single interventions, imprisoning people, only sends a message to a degree. But a campaign that raises the consciousness of people throughout the country and places impact at all spheres of government by and pressure from the public in general will make the
We are done now, Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Continue with further responses for PBO.
With FSC.
Yeah, we are done with FSC. Can you continue with PBO?
Can we now go to PBO? Am I audible? Or
yeah, not so clear, but we then going to
yes,
continue.
Am I audible, Honorable Judge?
Yes, I can hear you, Chair.
Okay, can you then allow PBO
yes, okay,
to respond and share the ideas with us. Thank you, Honorable Jadu.
Thank you.
PBO, you may continue. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Members. Thank you so much, Chair. Also for that discussion quite closely. One of the common government to be able to implement service delivery plans and realize those service delivery plans, which in a way is lack of people to raise for funds, they need to follow through. And most important, which you decided to put in our presentation, and Chairperson and other members, is the issue of ensuring there's proper accountability mechanisms at both, council and also at management level in local government. Very, very important to let, take through or take the management back into position that they're able to deliver on service delivery. But also the one of the points that came up was the issue of failure to monitor public finances throughout the public, throughout this budget cycle, which at the end of the day, you realize later, which is of course is also interlinked with the issue of capacity, to monitor the situation throughout the year. Come at the end of the day, you realize the other challenges that are taking. So I think that's a comment I want to make around the issue of local government in this regard. It's quite generic, but I think it's very important to comes across throughout all the provinces and throughout the years, lack of adequate accountability measures and lack of necessary capacity in many of the local governments. The issue of public transport, I think in our previous presentation, we have shown that actually it is very interesting because majority of the study shows that actually majority of South Africans who use public transport actually rely heavily on the taxis, which are in many instances are not benefiting from the public finance benefits, and also lastly because some of the public sector provided public transports are not reliable in the trains. So it's a very, very important aspect because households are losing a lot of money on taxes, which are not receiving benefits, plus the lack of proper infrastructure in public transport. So I think the method, every province would probably want to follow through in this regard. Chairperson, I'll give Dr. Olandi and further other colleagues a comment in this regard. Thank you so much. Dr. Olandi.
Okay. Thank you, Doris. In terms of Honourable Mukiva, you just wanted to an overall picture. The overall picture actually shows Honourable Mukiva that we've reprioritized a lot of our compensation funds. We've reduced compensation throughout all the function groups because we had to reprioritize funds towards ESCOM. Remember, we allocated 31.7 billion to ESCOM. And then we also reduced provincial equitable shares, I think by 27 billion. And I just one example in terms of the police compensation were reduced by 11 billion in 2021-22. But on the other hand, if you look at the structure of the compensation of employees in police, there's still a lot of high-level positions. When you look at the overall picture in terms of how they structured their compensation, it's not that they increase the lower levels and decrease higher levels. So there hasn't been that kind of change within the numbers in police, although we don't really agree that we decrease the police because we need the police for the safety and the peace and security issues. But then again, we've taken the money away, but we don't really know how they've restructured these deals. In terms of, I think it's the Honourable Ryder, in terms of the implementation, when we did the analysis and what we also shared within our presentation, Honourable Ryder, is that although we've reduced some of the budgets, we also saw really slow spending in the current financial year. So it's also a matter of implementation in terms of how we spend the money and in terms of performance. Something else that I also just want to mention relates to this is we are currently busy, the PBO is busy with a series of analysis of conditional grants, and I'm currently busy with agriculture. And it's actually frightening to see the duplication within the different grants in terms of the outputs. And also, it's also very frightening to to really see the performance on the agricultural grounds. So there's a lot of things that contribute in terms of not spending and or not seeing the impact, because we're allocating funds towards different things but with the exact same output. In terms of the movement from direct to indirect, I'm not convinced that it is the ideal situation, because if we can just look at the example of health, in terms of the NHI, the indirect proportion hasn't been spent, and the national government has also now seen they couldn't appoint any GPs for NHI purposes. So that function has now been allocated to provinces. It's not going to be a national function any longer to contract GPs to provide services. In terms of the public transport, Honourable Digger Lady, the transport grant was reduced by 31.9%, but that was in the 2020 financial year. So that money has actually been given back in 2021, because the grant increases by 48.4% in 2021-22. The thing is, we just need to make sure that we implement that grant and we implement the function, and as what the FFC Commissioner indicated is that they really want to provide real expensive infrastructure, and perhaps that is the whole stumbling block within the implementation process of this grant. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we...
Yes, could we give Dr. Mohamed to also give comment there?
Yes, Dr. Mohamed. We would like to make
sure you have time. I'll just comment on two things to be quick, but in this last question. The first question is about dealing with the biggest health debt, and I mean, I think one of the things we should be clear on that what we were showing is that in real terms, per capita at the local government level, share meant for services declining and declining consistently over the period. And we also need then to take into account not only the per capita what's happening, but also that what we've seen over the past few years in South Africa is that the pace of new households, or the growth in households, has outpaced the rate of population growth. So we're now sitting at over 17 million households. A few years ago, it was sort of around 13, 14 million. And so it's going to become harder for people given the allocations and the number of households that are dependent, that are going to be more dependent on services with reduced allocation, to actually pay. I think you will find problems with debt payments and the actual debt increasing rather than decreasing. And I don't think there's necessarily clear plans for dealing with that. So I think the declines in provision for basic services is going to affect the standard of living, it's going to affect the social wage, and it's going to affect affordability. And as we've seen in things like transport, it's not only a money issue in transport, there's serious structural and corruption and other kinds of problems that we do have spoke of, for instance, especially the rail, that those are going to make the earning of income harder. So I worry that such is actually going to make things worse and add to that liquidity. The second issue, and it comes up all the time,
so much.
Thank you very much. FFC, PBO, are there any further questions from the members? Any further hands, Gulani? Any further?
No,
okay. Yes, yeah, Chairperson Masango is still experiencing challenge network. So, Chairperson, we're then going to get further members to the next. We are done with briefings from the FFC and PBO. And then the next session that I will be handling, mandated by the Chairperson, that we deal with the minutes of the previous meetings. We should be but I will also just indicate as to how this minutes is unfolding. For your record, Gulelani, to assist in terms of how we're going to move forward for members also, we will have the just of the process to write down. I will give the list. He will deal with the minutes of the 8th of December, which will be 4 pages. And then he will deal with the minutes of the 3rd of February, 6 pages. He will deal with the minutes of the 17th of February, which will be 9 pages. He will also deal with the minutes of the 17th of February, 10 pages. And the 25th of February, 9 pages. And then the 2nd of March, 7 pages, then the 10th of March, 8 pages. So also with the understanding and belief that members did receive the minutes, so that we then will go straight to the minutes for adoption of the minutes. Then we will then immediately go to the minutes of the 8th of December. Are there any comments or any proposal for adoption of the 8th of December?
Chairperson, unless there are any suggestions from members for changes, I'd like to move. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Karim. Honorable Karim is moving for the 8th of December. For who's seconding?
I'm seconding, Chair.
Honorable Basangu seconding. Thank you very much. Then the minutes of the 3rd of February. Any clarity or proposal?
Sorry, can I please mess up with the process that you understand? I would like to request that for procedural purposes, that even though Chairperson is not chairing this session, but as the Chairperson, as designated Chairperson, she must not move or second, because this meeting will appear one if she is chairing. So as a Chairperson, she can't move or either second. But we understand the challenge that is because of the network, but other members can participate even though she is present. But it might change the conclusion.
Yeah, Chairperson, in charge, what has our Chairperson, Masilangu, got to hide that she quickly seconded? Am I moving it?
I will draw.
Okay. Honorable Masamu, how is your network now?
I can't predict on it. Just continue.
Okay. Right. Can we get a second to Honorable Karim on the 8th of December?
Dennis Ryder.
I'm going to call the members just to respond. If there's any response, Honorable Mkiva, Honorable Ryder, Honorable Okam, Honorable Manohane, Honorable Murtane. We need a second for the minutes.
Yes, I'll second, no problem. Only because you just told me to.
Okay. No. Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Members. We go to the 3rd of February. Any proposal?
Yunus Karim, thank you.
Honorable Marasane, okay, Honorable Mamras Marasane, then please come to Honorable Yunus. Honorable 17 February, proposal.
Yunus, I move, thank you.
Okay, Honorable Yunus.
Let me second the Honorable Karim.
No, we won't be able to hear.